Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me today on this week's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Always appreciate you joining me as I speak to healthcare leaders from really all around the globe. And so today's guest is Dr. Diego Reyno. He is the president and CEO of Intercept Telehealth. Diego, welcome to I Don't Care.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Glad that you could join me. Tell me a little bit, tell my audience a little bit about you and your journey and how you came to found Intercept Telehealth.
Great, yeah. So I'm a liver transplant surgeon, and I've been in practice for about 10 years. I did most of my training in the Northeast, and I did my liver and kidney transplant training at UCLA. And I started my practice at the Cleveland Clinic in Florida. And kind of in the early part of my career, I started to really find that there was a lack of proactivity in critical care. And I was really concerned about really my patients, and even some of the best hospitals in America, I found that care was often delayed. It was substandard, and especially in high acuity situations. And it really wasn't because there weren't good doctors or there weren't good nurses, but really it was because there just wasn't enough of them. And so I set out on my journey at that point to really try and find a way to leverage technology and really utilize a scarce resource, which is critical care doctors, to really sort of use that as the fulcrum to build a company that, like I said, utilizes technology and allows for the best and brightest intensivists throughout the United States to be able to take care of patients in the most remote areas of the country. And so really the problem lies that, especially in middle America, or you'd be surprised, even in very populated areas of the United States, there's situations where even, as I mentioned, right outside of New York City or right outside of Miami or a big metropolitan area, you'll find a hospital that at 9 o'clock at night does not have a board certified intensivist taking care of patients. And a lot of times patients are really just left fending for themselves. And so we set out on a mission to really bring equity and access to gold standard critical care and use technology to use virtual platforms to care for these patients all over the United States. And so that's what really was the nidus for our company. And it really started with some of my own patients. And I recognized that we needed to be faster in the ICU. We needed to be able to deliver equitable care to all Americans. And that's how we got started.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it's interesting to see the evolution of telehealth. I first used it 25 years ago in outstate Nebraska, just for simple clinic visits. You know, we had a very large catchment area with a real void in any sort of specialists outside of our community. And so to be able to provide care to people in a catchment area the size of the state of Indiana, we started using telehealth, and we were, you know, that hospital was a pioneer in that. But it was very basic. You know, somebody would go to a local clinic and they would have a suspect video feed and that would be fed back to our hospital. And it's really been interesting to see just the evolution of telehealth over these 25 years. And you hit the nail on the head, Dr. Reyno, because, you know, as you said, even in larger communities, I'm in a community of about 180,000 people, and you would think, okay, that's large enough to be able to support enough specialists, enough critical care specialists to cover the hospital, but that's not the case. And each market is really different in their ability to be able to recruit and retain quality physicians. And so how are you able to do that? I know there are a number of critical care specialists, board certified specialists all over the country, but they're busy. So how are you able to talk them into taking on that second and sometimes third job of telemedicine?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that this is where, and I appreciate your story, is sort of where telehealth started 25 years ago. And the evolution of the technology is really what has allowed us to leverage a very scarce resource and be able to apply it more broadly and sort of load balance, you know, where, how intensivists are being utilized and across the country. And so we've employed a couple technology strategies, to do this. And number one is, firstly, we are fully decentralized. And so we are an entirely virtual company. And that has allowed us to really recruit and retain the top talent throughout the United States. Our intensivists, you know, at this point on our team and our staff, we have a comp between physicians and critical care nurse practitioners. So between intensivists and critical care nurse practitioners, we have 53 staff at this point. And the reason we've been able to do that is because we recruit them from all over the country. And we have good technology that allows them to be able to deliver this care from the comforts of their home without having to go to a centralized location. And so because of that, we have a contingent of doctors and nurse practitioners that are from Stanford. We have a little Stanford group. We have a Columbia group. We have a Miami group, just because it's word of mouth and people want to join and be part of a good group. And so, you know, we have these pockets of people, and just based on, you know, what our team and what our training has been and where we've been able to draw people from. But, you know, these folks are working from California, they're working from New York. And so, but we're able to put them in front of a piece of technology that allows them to do that and allows them to care for more patients at once. And so because we have a scarce resource, we are forced to be able to use any one individual intensivist to the maximum capacity that we can use them. And so we have a system for doing so. Part of that system is utilizing critical care nurse practitioners that can work at the top of their license, kind of gather information and put things in front of the intensivist in order to make high level decisions about the direction of care. And then secondly, you know, our technology allows for the physician and the nurse practitioner, our remote team, the technology is fully integrated into the bedside. So if you walk into an ICU, all of the monitors, all of the information that you see when you walk into the room, you know, the stuff on the ventilator, the stuff on the dialysis machine, the information coming out of the monitors, et cetera, all of that information is integrated and is being transmitted across our technology onto our platform that is in front of our physicians. So they typically have eight screens in front of them that has all different bits of information. It's as if though they were standing at the bedside. And so it really allows us to, you know, if you imagine an airport control tower, you know, and really see all of the beds at the same time, and be able to delineate, you know, who are the patients that are at risk of deteriorating. And, you know, if they do, you know, as you know, if there's a cardiac arrest or something inside of a hospital, you know, that code team has to walk there. It might take them 5 or 7 minutes to get there. Whereas our physician is instantly, they just turn on the camera and are instantly involved in that patient's care. So our goal is to be fast. Our goal is to be proactive and continuously monitoring the patients. And we've had some good success in doing so.
That sounds great. Tell my audience a little bit about how does this impact the nurse or the PCT at the bedside at the facilities? What do they have to do to ensure that your team is able to provide quality care?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we often find, so, you know, when we speak to hospital partners, you know, we really talk to them in sort of two modes. Number one, you know, we're there to take care of the patients first and foremost, and that's our goal. But part of what we're also selling is that we also want to take care of our hospital partners and the providers at the bedside. And what ultimately ends up happening is that in many instances, in many, many hospitals throughout the United States, there could be a sick patient in the ICU in the middle of the night. And that nurse, which is in this day and age, often a very young, inexperienced nurse in the ICU, because the nursing workforce has become exponentially younger. And so a lot of times you have a young, inexperienced nurse in the ICU kind of left fending for themselves. And they have to call a doctor at home in the middle of the night who's sleeping, who may not often be able to even know that they're getting called. And so this kind of a service gives them instant access within seconds to be able to reach out to an intensivist or to a nurse practitioner remotely. If they have a concern, our team can simply just push a button, camera in, have a face-to-face conversation with that nurse within seconds. And that's just one way that we communicate. We have a lot of other communication platforms that we utilize for different levels of acuity, different levels of information that is needed. But for the most part, if they have a real concern, they just push a button on the wall and the camera flips around, focuses in, our face comes on a big screen in the room, the face of the doctor or the nurse practitioner comes onto the screen, and they're now having a two-way audiovisual conversation with our provider. So for them, it's instant access. You know, I think that's what they're benefiting from.
I know one of the domains of achieving a leapfrog A rating for safety is having board certified critical care physicians in ICUs. Does this qualify for that?
Yeah, indeed. So with our involvement, an ICU or a hospital can achieve a leapfrog A grade for intensivist standard because they have instant access to an intensivist, a two-way audiovisual assessment of the patient. And the criteria is to be able to do it within five minutes. And our service level agreements with our customers and our average is in the 36 second range. So from the time that somebody pushes a button to the time that we come onto the screen. And so this will fulfill that criteria to the maximum extent.
Okay. And I thought it might, I just wasn't quite sure as far as the telehealth aspect of it. So very good. So critical care coverage is not the only aspect that Intercept has, right? You know, I saw virtual nursing and a few others. So let's talk about some of those as well.
Yeah, we have focused, in the early stages of our company, we have focused on virtual critical care. You know, my thinking at that time was, you know, if we can master the most challenging area of the hospital, we can then branch out into other environments. And so, we also deliver virtual neurology, teleneurology, telestroke care, through partnerships, we're able to really render hospitals as comprehensive stroke centers. And can immediately deliver virtual stroke care and virtual neurology care on an elective basis inside of a hospital in an inpatient setting. Beyond that, in the last 2 years, we've recruited someone to Intercept who is world-renowned in developing virtual nursing and virtual sepsis platforms. And since then, we have launched that as part of what we do because, frankly, we do it already on a day-to-day basis where nurses are supporting nurses in the ICU. But what we find is that there is also a need for nursing support outside of the ICU and throughout the rest of the hospital. And really, those environments, it's really to help with hospital throughput. It's to help with load balancing of work, right? What we really want to try and support the nursing on the virtual nursing side is that, you know, the big issue, as you know, in the U.S. today is that the nursing ratios are completely offset. So you might have five or six patients being cared for by one nurse. And mm-hmm. what ends up happening is that the nurse doesn't have the time to take care of the patient because they spend so much time documenting. They spend so much time preparing a patient mm-hmm. for discharge. And so the patients feel like they're just out there on their own because the nurse is just running around it, but not able to just physically put their hands on the patient as much as they would like to. And so what we do is we help support all of that remotely in the background, where we prepare all things for discharge. We handle a lot of the paperwork. We handle a lot of the documentation. And you have a very experienced nurse working remotely who can help guide, again, some of these junior nurses in order to help them prioritize the work for the day, the patient, and to just serve as a mentor to say, hey, you know, I'm worried about this patient. What do you think? And you have an experienced nurse working remotely who can say, yeah, I see what you mean. Let's do the following. I think it's time to maybe give a call to the doctor, whatever the situation may call for. But that's how virtual nursing helps support not only in the ICU, but outside of the ICU as well.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful service to provide because, as you said, our nurse complement today is very young and, for the most part, very inexperienced. And so having access to someone who is seasoned, who has that level of experience, will do nothing but continue to improve patient care. I've had a lot of experience in my last hospital working with teleneurology, telestroke coverage, because neurology certainly over the last 10 to 12 years has become so subspecialized that it's very difficult to find and recruit neurology into communities of my size, as I said, 180, 200,000. So, you know, it's wonderful to hear that there's another option for hospitals out there because, you know, strokes continue to increase in prevalence. And, you know, gone are the days that you had the luxury of being able to travel a bit of a distance to get to a comprehensive stroke center or really any hospital that has experience in working with strokes. And so, you know, teleneuro, telestroke now is almost becoming the standard. Because of the lack of neurology, would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, here's what teleneurology and telestroke has truly revolutionized the care, right? Because the reality of the matter is that time is brain, right? And so that we used to talk about a door to needle time and having a door to needle time of less than 1 hour. The reality of the matter is that it is no longer a door to needle time, and the real cutting edge of providing telestroke care really starts in the ambulance. And so for patients who call an ambulance and are suspected of having a stroke, the most progressive and as I mentioned previously, through our work and our development with our partnerships, we can start delivering telestroke care inside of an ambulance by having the technology available in an ambulance where a board-certified neurologist can examine that patient remotely while they're in the ambulance and make a determination that this patient is likely having a stroke. And they can start making clinical decisions at that point. And as soon as the patient hits the door, you know, we know exactly where that patient needs to go for imaging and to start really packaging up what will be, you know, whether we have to administer TPA or what the next step in management of care would be, you know. And so that's really where the care has gone. And that's how technology has moved forward to try to help these outcomes, because every minute that we're delaying, that patient is at risk of a worse outcome.
That's very true. So you mentioned something that really piqued my interest, the telesepsis. Talk a little bit about that, because, you know, every hospital, you know, is frankly faced with challenges in how to control sepsis. So talk a little bit about how your folks can help a hospital do that.
Yeah, so that is sort of along the side of our virtual nursing program, we developed our virtual sepsis program. And again, largely because we have the expertise in how to design it and how to create it and understanding how to design a program. But beyond that, what we have found is that in this day and age and really beginning in 2026, CMS is going to start penalizing hospitals who don't fulfill SEP 1 guidelines and who have SEP 1 dropouts. And if hospitals are not near the mean for their cohort or hospitals that look similar to them in the region, and they fall below that mean within a percentile, CMS is going to start penalizing these hospitals. And so I think what we're seeing now is hospitals are considering this a risk and taking it very seriously. And so the way that our company helps in that sense is that when a sepsis case is identified, we're able to immediately get involved and start sort of putting that patient down that 6-hour sepsis bundle to make sure that there's compliance being set forth within the bundle. Because whenever you start managing if you identify a patient as having sepsis or at risk of sepsis and you name it that way, then you have to treat it that way. So they need to get a certain amount of fluid per kilogram, and antibiotics, early goal directed antibiotics need to be started, and you have to go down this sepsis pathway. And it has to be very clearly documented. And what we often find is that, especially in the emergency department, where emergency docs are managing a lot of things at the same time, it's difficult for them to meet. There's very specific time criteria that have to be met in order for this sepsis case to not be a sepsis fallout. And so, for hospitals to not be penalized. So with our group, we're able to put a trained nurse practitioner managing those individual sepsis cases and keeping track of them and saying, okay, now we need to give fluid. Now we need to start antibiotics. Now we need to recheck a lactate, doing all the things that we typically do once you're going down the sepsis bundle, and then closing out the case at the 6-hour period, because that wraps up the SEP 1 guidelines. And so that's what we do. And believe it or not, just paying close attention to it and having a dedicated team to it allows for that compliance to go up significantly and for the penalties to be avoided. And the reality of the matter is that hospitals don't have the infrastructure, and they really don't have the wherewithal or the how to prioritize this internally. And so this is an additional service that we're able to provide for hospitals alongside the virtual nursing. And it has shown tremendous value, in really across the country in major health systems. It has shown tremendous value because even like some of these sepsis alerts that are available within the electronic medical record systems, They're not sensitive or specific enough. They're really not specific. And so we have found that at least in this day and age, we're still in a position where having trained people who can recognize the patterns of sepsis and put the protocols in place will ultimately lead to the best results.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, because you're right. Most hospitals don't have the luxury of being able to dedicate a sepsis coordinator anymore. And so trying to find those additional resources to be able to help out with that is key. So any thoughts about, next generation for you guys? What area of specialization are you considering, if you are?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, it's blue ocean out there, as they say. And, I think we will always be interested in expanding our specialties that we can deliver services with, and really with the priority and keeping our shared mission that we want to provide the highest level of access to care to all Americans and provide that care to them from anywhere, right? And so we will potentially expand into other services in the future. But right now, I think there's just so much of a need in the neurology, nursing, and critical care space that we think that we have a, you know, our work cut out for us there, and think that we can really make an impact there. And that's where we're putting our primary focus.
Well, good for you. I appreciate that. So folks in my audience who are with large hospitals, health systems, how can they reach out to you and find out more about Intercept Telehealth?
Yeah, absolutely. They can reach out to us. We're at www.intercepttelehealth.com. Going to our website and asking for more information is one way to do so. And but of course, if there was somebody within any listener who's reaching out to you, you have my phone number. Anybody can reach out to me directly anytime, and I'd be happy to talk to them.
Well, that sounds great. I really appreciate it, Dr. Reno. It's been interesting hearing about how you and your company are addressing a real critical need in hospitals today. So any last words?
No, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to speak about our company and the good work that we're doing. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Dr. Diego Reyna, he is the president and CEO of Intercept Telehealth. And give him a look. And I'm sure if your hospital or health system is having issues in and around staffing your critical care physician needs, they can certainly help you out. So with that, that's another episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. I thank you for spending your time with me today, and we will see you next week. Thanks.